So imagine watching a principal ballet dancer just kind of, float across the stage. It looks totally
Oh,
effortless.
absolutely. Like they were just born to do it.
Right. Just defying gravity without even breaking a sweat. But if you look under that illusion of weightlessness, well, there is this brutal, rigid foundation of really precise mechanics.
Yeah, muscle tension, the intense physics of it all.
Taped up toes, exactly. And that is exactly our mission today. Welcome to the deep dive.
We've got a really great one for you today.
We do. We are exploring this fascinating intersection of artificial intelligence, high-end social media culture, and software engineering. We've actually got our hands on a developer's post, and it's titled Under the Hood: How Elon Talks to Gemini.
And it is honestly an incredible read.
It really is. It pulls back the curtain on this phenomenon that you see, well, pretty much every single time you open a social media app.
Yeah, so for anyone who might be unfamiliar with the source material, we're looking at a system called Elon. And it's basically an application designed to generate complete social media moments.
Right, like the whole package.
Exactly. Specifically, a carousel of four photos and an accompanying caption. And its entire singular purpose is to project what the developer actually calls inadvertent superiority.
I love that phrase so much. Inadvertent superiority.
It perfectly captures it, right?
Yeah.
It creates this absolute illusion of effortless luxury, custom tailored for platforms that are essentially a highly curated lifestyle blend of like Instagram and Pinterest.
Right. And the core irony here, and this brings us right back to your ballet metaphor, is that producing digital content that looks that completely natural and, unbothered,
Candid, yeah.
yeah, candid, it requires this massively complex, mathematically precise system operating under the hood. Like the system is sweating so the user doesn't have to.
It is a great way to put it.
So, okay, let's unpack the mechanics of that sweat. Because before Elon can even generate a single pixel of an image, it basically has to tell the AI how to be cool.
And translating human vibes into executable code is, well, it's a massive challenge.
Right. How do you do that? The developer approaches this with a specific function that builds the prompt. And every single generation runs through this function, which constructs this massive, highly structured 10-section prompt.
Yeah, 10 distinct sections, and each one acts like a parameter in almost like a psychological profile that's disguised as an API call.
It really is. And the first thing that really jumped out at me in the source notes is the language choice. The developer specifically uses the target audience's native language for all the scene and aesthetic descriptions.
Which is super interesting.
Right, because you'd assume with a US-based AI like Gemini, English would just naturally be the default command language.
You would think so.
Yeah.
But the developer found that because the target audience and those specific aesthetic references are so deeply rooted in their own social media ecosystem, writing the prompts in their native language actually taps into a different part of the AI's latent space. Yeah, it produces much more culturally appropriate visual compositions. I mean, it's a great example of tuning your instrument to the specific acoustics of the room you're playing in.
That is wild. And the subtlety they apply to the language is just incredible. Like when Elon tells the AI what the person in the photo should be wearing, it deliberately avoids brand names.
Yes, no specific designers.
Right. It doesn't say, Hermes scarf, it says silk sarong, or it just asks for generic designer sunglasses. The actual brand names are hidden away in a separate array called brand hints, and they're categorized strictly as scene aesthetic.
Because it's basically instructing the model on the overall tier of luxury it's aiming for, but without actually forcing it to generate specific recognizable logos.
Which is a huge deal.
Huge. That nuance is a crucial detail for brand safety, which we will definitely get to later, but it also heavily feeds into the psychology of the whole aesthetic.
Okay, so the real magic, like the absolute secret sauce of this entire operation, lives in section 8 of the prompt, the vanity design instructions.
Oh, this part is brilliant.
This is where the application essentially wrestles the AI into submission. I kept picturing this analogy while reading it. Directing this AI is like, it's like directing a terrible, overeager actor in a commercial.
Yes, the one who just tries too hard.
Exactly. The guy who keeps trying to hold the product right up to the camera with this giant cheesy grin, and you have to explicitly, firmly command them to look away and just act normal.
Right, and what's fascinating here is understanding why the AI acts like that eager actor in the first place. You really have to look at how these large multimodal models are trained.
Which is on like everything, right?
Exactly. So if you don't give Gemini the specific vanity instructions, its default behavior is just commercial product photography. It naturally centers luxury items in the frame because, well, in its vast database of millions of training images, that is exactly how branded luxury items are presented.
That makes total sense.
Right. The AI sees luxury bag in the prompt, and its mathematical reflex is, okay, let me put that right in the middle, perfectly lit, on a pedestal.
Right, so the developer has to literally force it to stop doing that. The vanity design instructions have these incredibly specific, almost aggressive rules. Like, the very first one is literally, incidentally, never centered.
I love that. Mm. It is structurally forcing the luxury to become the context of the user's life, not the subject of the photo.
Yes. And another rule mandates items must be, you know, partially visible or at natural angles, because a fully visible face-on logo just screams advertisement to anyone scrolling their feed.
Well, 100%. It's too obvious.
Right. It has to be partially obscured by a folded scarf, or maybe caught at a weird 45-degree angle on a side table. So it reads as a genuine captured moment in real life. The prompt even explicitly says, candid life moment, not an advertisement.
The emotional target they finally landed on in that section is just brilliant. The developer notes they initially tried these sort of academic descriptions, like telling the AI to project nonchalant affluence.
And the AI was like, what does that mean?
Exactly. The image generator just didn't understand what that meant visually.
So they changed it to pure colloquial language. They literally type into the prompt, this is just my normal Tuesday.
My normal Tuesday. It's so good. Because without that phrase, you get a billboard, you know, the expensive bags front and center. But with that phrase, the luxury items just sort of drift to the edges of the frame.
They become background noise.
Right. The bag is casually tossed on a chair. The logo of the five-star hotel is slightly out of focus in the background. The user becomes the protagonist. And the immense wealth is just the assumed background noise of their everyday existence.
Okay, so we've established how Elon wrestles the AI into generating this perfect, unbothered aesthetic. But perfect lighting and a casually tossed bag mean absolutely nothing if the user looks at the photo and sees a complete stalker's face.
Yeah, that ruins the whole thing immediately.
Exactly. The aesthetic has to map to an identity. The system is dealing with severe, relentless vanity.
Which is where we get into the architecture of the API call itself. The developer realized a fundamental truth about interacting with these models. And that is, how you send information to Gemini actually changes how much attention it pays to that information.
Okay, wait, unpack that for me.
So Elon uses what they call an image-first architecture.
Right, so before it sends any of that 10-section text prompt we just talked about, it sends the user's reference images. Yeah. The photos carry the actual facial identity, and the text just says, you know, use those photos.
Exactly.
But I actually have to push back on a detail in the source here, because the developer notes that they send every single reference image to the AI twice in the same array.
Yes, they duplicate them.
Wait, sending the exact same photo twice actually works? Isn't that like repeating yourself to someone who isn't even listening? Why doesn't that just completely confuse the model's processing?
That reaction makes total sense from a human perspective, absolutely. But it raises an important question about how large multimodal models actually perceive input. Like, it's not human perception, it's a mathematical weight.
Okay.
So when you feed an image into an AI, it converts those pixels into tokens. By duplicating the image in the input array, you are essentially doubling the token weight of the visual data before the text even begins.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, you are placing twice as many weights on the face side of the scale. It forces the model's attention mechanism to anchor much more heavily on the facial structure. And then that massive block of text that follows is essentially just fighting for whatever attention bandwidth is left over.
Wow. So it's a literal tug of war for the AI's brain.
Exactly.
The developer actually calls this phenomenon face drift. There is this constant measurable tension. The more text you add about the scene, you know, the lighting, the mood, the more the AI starts to lose its grip on the user's actual face.
Yeah, the model will sometimes just sacrifice facial accuracy just to better match the stylistic direction of your text prompt.
Which means, true, perfect identity locking it across four independent generated photos is, well, it's technically impossible with the current API, unless you want to spend thousands of dollars fine-tuning a custom model for every single user.
Right, which obviously they aren't going to do.
Yeah.
So since they can't do that, the developer built a quality control loop to catch the drift. A bouncer, if you will.
A digital bouncer. And it works for fractions of a cent. They utilize a cheaper, lightning-fast, text-only model called Gemini Flash.
Yeah, the Flash model is key here.
So as soon as a high-end luxury photo is generated by the main model, Elon just quietly hands it over to Gemini Flash alongside the original user reference photos and asks a simple, brutal question. Is this the same person?
And what's fascinating is the failure rate they report is surprisingly high.
Yeah, 15 to 20% of the time, the bouncer looks at the million-dollar generated aesthetic, says, nope, not the same person, and throws the photo right in the trash.
Just tosses it out.
Exactly. And it triggers an automatic retry, allowing up to 2 retries per shot. And those retries end up fixing about 80% of the failures.
Which is great, because it prevents the user from having that incredibly jarring experience of seeing, like, a slightly altered stranger living out their normal Tuesday.
Right, nobody wants that.
But here's the thing. So the bouncer is doing its job protecting the illusion, but throwing out 20% of the photos creates a massive new problem.
Time.
Time. Retries add latency. Generating these highly calibrated, high-resolution images isn't instantaneous to begin with, you know. Each successful photo takes between 15 and 60 seconds.
Oh, wow. That's a long time in app years.
It is. So for a 4-photo set, factoring in a retry or two, you are suddenly asking a modern, dopamine-driven social media user to just sit there and stare at their screen for potentially 4 minutes.
In digital time, 4 minutes is an absolute eternity. You've lost them. They're gone.
Exactly.
So I was reading the engineering notes, trying to figure out how you keep a user engaged through all of that waiting. The developer notes they use server-sent events, or SSE, for the data stream instead of WebSocket.
Yeah, and from an infrastructure standpoint, that is a highly specific and deliberate choice. If you've ever looked into real-time applications, you usually hear about WebSockets being the absolute gold standard.
Right. I was actually surprised they didn't use WebSockets. If you're building a live feed of photos generating, isn't a persistent connection just better?
Well, WebSockets are bidirectional. They keep this heavy, persistent two-way street open between the server and the user's phone. But LAN is built on serverless infrastructure.
Okay, so how does that change things?
Serverless functions are designed to spin up, execute a specific job, and immediately die to save money. Keeping a WebSocket open completely breaks the serverless model. It forces the server to just stay awake and bill you for idle time.
Oh, that sounds expensive.
It is. Plus, Elon doesn't actually need the user to send anything back once the generation starts, right? It just needs to fire off the finished photos down to the phone.
Oh, so it's a one-way street.
Exactly. SSE is unidirectional. The server just pushes data packets down the pipe as they render. And crucially, if you are on a spotty mobile network and the connection drops, SSE is native to HTTP. It just reconnects naturally without having to rebuild a whole complex handshake.
That is so smart. Okay, here's where it gets really interesting to me. While the user is waiting for those SSE packets to arrive, they don't see a standard progress bar.
No, because a progress bar is a terrible idea here.
Right. The developer points out that a progress bar implies a mathematically predictable duration, which they absolutely do not have because of the bouncer randomly throwing out bad photos.
You'd just be watching a bar stall at 90% for 2 minutes?
Exactly. Plus, honestly, watching a progress bar just feels like work. Instead, the user is presented with this smooth, beautifully animated slideshow of their original reference photos with a subtle message that translates to, "You're light just right."
You're light just right. It's incredibly soothing from a UX perspective.
Very really.
It completely reframes the psychology of the wait.
Mm-hmm.
The photos aren't, you know, processing or rendering or buffering. They are arriving. It maintains the illusion of effortlessness even when the back end is churning through all these retries.
So smart. And then, as those photos finally arrive, the app delivers the absolute final piece of the puzzle, the caption.
Yes, the captions.
So the captions are also generated in the background by that cheaper Gemini Flash model, and the user is presented with 3 distinct styles to choose from.
And those 3 styles are honestly a masterclass in the unwritten rules of social media posturing.
Totally. Style 1 is called Versailles. This is the ultimate humble brag. The caption describes something incredibly mundane, completely and purposefully ignoring the fact that the photo attached to it is dripping in wealth.
It's so funny.
The example the developer pulled from their prompts reference pool is literally, "Rare to think about nothing, soaked in water all day."
Just a casual everyday soak. Nothing to see here.
Right. Meanwhile, the generated photo the user is pairing it with is them lounging in this breathtaking infinity pool overlooking a private Mediterranean vista.
Classic.
Then you have style 2, which is poetic, Very minimalist, abstract imagery. Water and sky became one color.
Good.
No personal narration, no explanation of where they are.
Just vibes.
Pure vibes. And style three is minimal. Ultra short, soaking, don't want to move. Just maximum white space.
Notice what all three of these highly tuned styles have in common. Or, well, rather, what they distinctly lack.
Yes, the golden rule of the app. The caption prompt explicitly, fundamentally forbids the AI from mentioning brand names, specific hotels, restaurants, or geographical landmarks.
Which is so crucial. If we connect this to the broader picture of human behavior, this is where the psychology of status really shines.
How so?
Well, think about your own feed. If someone posts a photo and the caption says, "Checked into the Four Seasons," the illusion of effortlessness is entirely destroyed.
Oh, absolutely. It looks like you're trying way too hard.
Exactly. It looks like you care that people know where you are. The textual modesty is the only thing that makes the intense visual vanity socially acceptable.
That is so true. The caption is actively forbidden from doing any heavy lifting. It basically has to play dumb while the photo flexes its muscles. It's this perfectly choreographed dance between the visual and the textual.
It really is.
But looking at the back end, there is a massive reality check here. Achieving this flawless, unbothered aesthetic is technically impressive, sure, but we're talking about really heavy image processing. AI token generation isn't free.
Not even close to free.
Right. I have to imagine generating 4 high-resolution photos, plus all those retries we talked about, is just bleeding this developer dry.
Oh, this is where the engineering elegance just crashes headfirst into raw economics. Generating AI requires immense computational power, and that power comes with an aggressive receipt.
So what does this all actually mean for the developer? The source breaks down the literal cost of manufacturing a 4-photo digital luxury session. 96% of the procession cost is simply outputting image tokens.
That's a huge chunk.
Yeah. Generating an image is roughly 120 times more expensive per token than generating text.
120 times multiplier.
It's wild.
So all the text prompts, complex captions, the flash model acting as the bouncer doing the QC checks, all of that brilliant logic is just a rounding error on the server bill.
Just pennies.
Yeah. The actual pixels are what cost the real money. And if a user wants high resolution, the cost scales exponentially. Generating a 4K resolution image is 2.3 times the cost of a 1K image.
And remember that quality control loop we praised earlier? The bouncer throwing out bad faces?
Oh, yeah.
If a photo fails and has to retry twice, that is 3 times the image generation cost for that single shot. If all 4 photos in a carousel fail and retry twice, the session costs the developer nearly triple the base rate.
Which brings us to a really fascinating constraint the developer ran into during testing. Because they originally wanted to offer unlimited generations to their early beta testers just to gather as much data as possible.
Right. Standard beta test stuff.
But when they calculated the actual possession cost with all those retries factored in, that plan died instantly. They had to frantically implement a credit system.
Just to stop the bleeding.
Exactly. And the developer explicitly notes that this credit system wasn't even born out of a desire to monetize the app.
Yeah.
It wasn't some greedy corporate strategy to extract value.
No, it was implemented purely as an emergency brake to prevent the developer from going personally bankrupt during the beta test. The token costs of image generation are simply too massive to leave unchecked.
I love that irony so much. An app entirely dedicated to generating images of limitless wealth, completely unconstrained luxury and financial freedom is actually heavily constrained by a tight budget of literal pennies and server API fees.
It's the ultimate reality check. Mm-hmm. And it's not just the generation costs that drain the budget either. Storing these massive image files is incredibly expensive too.
Oh, right. The 2-hour TTL. Time to live. To save money on server storage, the generated images simply disappear after 2 hours.
Just gone.
Yeah, the session metadata just expires. Elan uses a cloud blob storage, and keeping thousands of 4K photos permanently hosted for free users would break the bank in a matter of days.
And the developer notes this aggressive deletion policy is the number one complaint from beta testers. I mean, imagine you use the app, you wait for the generations, you get a beautiful, perfectly calibrated set of luxurious photos, and then you leave the app to go do something else.
Sure, life happens.
And when you come back a few hours later to post them, your digital wealth has just vanished. Poof. Like a modern Cinderella story. But instead of a carriage turning into a pumpkin, it's your private infinity pool turning into a 404 error.
That is hilarious and tragic. You also have the roadblocks around brand safety that we touched on earlier. In the early days of development, they actually did use real names like Hermes or Chanel in the prompt.
Which is playing with fire.
Exactly. And Gemini would literally generate perfectly recognizable logos in the images, which, you know, sounds great for the user wanting to flex, but for the developer hosting the app, that is an absolute legal minefield.
You absolutely cannot build an automated commercial system that routinely generates trademarked intellectual property.
No way.
That's a fast track to a massive lawsuit and a cease and desist order from some of the most powerful legal teams in the entire fashion industry.
So they were legally forced to switch to those generic descriptions, you know, the silk sarong, and rely on the scene aesthetic tier mapping to just imply the wealth.
It's all about implication.
Right. The entire system is this incredibly delicate balancing act. You are constantly balancing facial accuracy against scene detail. You are balancing visual vanity against textual modesty.
And you're balancing the illusion of limitless wealth against the harsh reality of a serverless database bill.
Exactly. It is a remarkable piece of software engineering designed entirely to hide the fact that it was engineered in the first place.
It really is.
So just to recap the journey we've been on today, from a developer's keyboard all the way to the user's social feed, we looked at the intense cultural psychology built into a 10-section prompt, specifically those vanity design instructions that force the AI to push the luxury into the background so it doesn't look like a cheap ad.
And we explored the structural tricks like doubling the token weight by sending reference images twice just to preserve the user's identity.
Right, and those cheap text models acting as digital bouncers to prevent face drift.
We also saw how the system handles those agonizing wait times with unidirectional server sent events and soothing slideshows instead of stressful progress bars.
Your light just right.
Exactly. And how the captions are explicitly programmed to be as humble and generic as possible, to let the photos do all the heavy bragging.
And finally, the underlying economics of it all. The fact that outputting pixels is 120 times more expensive than text, which leads to evaporating photos, strict credit systems, and just a desperate fight against server costs.
It's an absolute masterclass in digital smoke and mirrors.
It really is. It really makes you appreciate the immense hidden complexity behind the things in our daily lives that look the absolute simplest.
It really does.
Which leaves us with a final thought for you to ponder long after this deep dive ends. We've just spent the last chunk of time seeing how a machine can be meticulously programmed to perfectly fake inadvertent superiority, right down to the mathematically calculated blur of a luxury logo in the background and a strategically aloof, ultra-short caption about a normal Tuesday.
So if an API can be trained to calculate that aesthetic so flawlessly,
how much of the authentic human content we see on our feeds every single day is just humans running this exact same algorithm in their own heads?
That is a great question.
Maybe we are all just constantly calculating our own internal vanity design instructions before we post a picture of our morning coffee. Think about that the next time you see a seemingly effortless ballet dancer or a perfectly casual vacation photo floating across your screen.
Until next time.